You're listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network. OneOfUs.net and all of the shows on it are 100% subscriber supported. Please consider becoming a subscriber to OneOfUs.net. Keep the site and all of our great shows going and get some terrific bonus content as well.
A show. I don't want to watch a show about a criminal lawyer. None of that Law and Order bullshit. I want a show about a criminal lawyer, bitch. And that was how I was going to segue into this review with my prime Jesse impression.
Yes, the one character who doesn't come back in this show. Yay.
Yet.
There's still time.
Oh, yeah. It's going to be Walt and Jesse, Rosencrantz, Guildenstern style.
They're so old now. I couldn't buy it.
See, that's what really gets with any anticipation I have for like a spinoff about Gus or anything. It's just they're all so old. I don't want it all to be Jesse Plemons and how Jonathan Banks is probably going to look during season 6. But anywho.
Please, Jonathan Banks is born old.
Oh, yeah. Hi, I'm Nathan, and we are reviewing Better Call Saul season 5, and I got a bunch of interrupters and backpedalers. Here I got Rose.
Hello.
And I got Doggett.
Doggett.
Then I got Bradley.
Hello.
And I got a little newcomer here. What's up, Ryan? Yo, this is obviously the prequel to Breaking Bad. Initially, when it started off, was supposed to be, what, like a 30-minute sitcom? And has now evolved into what I would call one of the best dramas on TV, if not the best.
Breaking Bad was a 30-minute sitcom?
Yes.
Well, the Huel spinoff will be.
Huel's rules!
Jimmy McGill has just changed his name to Saul, because it's Saul Goodman. And he wants to defend the people, any people, especially terrible people. Well, more or less people who make mistakes and maybe they shouldn't have. Maybe it was a bender, drug-fueled rage, violently killing someone with their car. He'll defend you, and for 50% off. And with him is Kim, his long love interest. This season mostly is about how their careers progress. And how maybe their relationship can progress as well. Also in the back, we have Mike feeling the guilt from his son's death.
It's not just his son's death. It's the death of Werner Ziegler.
He had it coming.
I don't get why that was so depressing for Mike. He's done so much worse than that.
They said no smoke breaks, and he took a smoke break.
He got smoked. On that smoke break, eh?
I see why it was so rough for him, because it was an actual, like, good man. Mm-hmm. Nonetheless, I mean, what his goals were wishy-washy, but he just was fascinated by the architecture of what he was building. And, I don't know, he related with Mike, and then Mike had to kill him.
Well, he made the mistake of being a good man in Albuquerque.
Oh, yeah.
He didn't realize he was in the Breaking Bad universe, the poor bastard.
And also, a sort of secondary main character, you got Nacho working undercover for Gus, getting information on the season's big bad, Lalo Salamanca.
Secondary main character? He is the main character of the show. He drives the plot for the first 3 seasons.
More or less this season, everybody has sort of gotten what they were looking for if they dropped off after season 1. We're right on the heels of Breaking Bad season 1 in the timeline. I mean, we're still 4 years off. You just feel Breaking Bad ahead. And, you know, Saul's up to actual Saul hijinks, which he really isn't up to that much in previous seasons. And we did sort of wait 2 years for this because of the break between El Camino. I'm just wondering, on the whole, was it worth the wait for you guys?
No, I think it absolutely was. Just, like, getting to see Saul finally, like, directing these cheesy commercials. Like, oh my god, that whole bit.
Was that Mesa Verde?
Yup.
I love it.
When I opened my baggie full of this season, you know, I took the season crystals out and I looked at them and, like, they were clear. They looked like a 99% proof. Pure show. It's the purest form.
who wants to live in a world without Breaking Bad.
2 years, we got an awesome Western, and then this. Vince Gilligan's pretty good at his job.
This is actually the season that Vince Gilligan was the least involved outside of directing one episode that we will talk about in spoiler talk. But he, on the whole, was not involved with the writer's room for the first time in the show's history. How did that transition go for you guys?
I didn't notice.
Yeah, it was pretty smooth. I mean, now that you say it, I can definitely kind of see that. But yeah, I really didn't notice.
Well, you know, it just means he works with a lot of good writers who understand his vision, I suppose.
Oh, yeah.
Well, this vision's mainly been by Peter Gould, who is the person who created not only just the show Better Call Saul with Vince, but created the character. He's sort of been more in a charge position since season 3, which honestly has kind of been where the season has started to peak.
Well, this season 3 was kind of the end of the Jimmy McGill story in a lot of ways. I mean, season 4, he changes his name, but what was most compelling to me about the Saul character at all, or Jimmy McGill, was his brother Chuck and how they would duel back and forth. You know, you had ethics versus morality tales, the spirit of the law versus the letter of the law, not being a piece of shit entitled human being versus Jimmy, you know. It's good, good seasons.
Mike sort of summed up the point of all of these shows early on when he talks to the squat cobbler guy, and he says his whole, no, you decided to commit a felony. Sure, you could go your whole life as an upstanding citizen, but you still decided to take something that didn't belong to you, sell it for profit. There can be honest criminals and crooked politicians. It's all about if you have an oath to one person, whether or not you uphold it or if you betray it. Sort of summed up the conflict to me between Jimmy and Chuck, which sort of was the building blocks for this entire show's intrigue to me. Because if it were just the Jonathan Banks stuff, I mean, as good as it is, it just feels like a redo of Breaking Bad.
Yeah.
Going forward, without Michael McKean, I'm so impressed.
Yeah, yeah.
By how this show has managed to sustain itself. So guys, I'm not sure how much more we can talk about this without getting into spoilers. I think we should definitely bring up one of the bigger characters of this season and the show as a whole, who is just killing it every season, which is Rae Seahorn.
Oh my God, yes.
As Kim Wexler.
I really, really hope that she isn't overlooked come award season time again whenever we do have another one, because she is just game MVP of this whole show.
Yeah, I think of this season, really, I think her character arc was actually the most interesting.
Yeah, no kidding, especially last night during the finale, which we'll get into later, but yeah, last night I was like, wait, what? Girl, what are you doing?
All the time.
It's amazing how she was able to sidestep the unreasonable hate Skylar got.
Oh, yeah.
And become one of the most beloved characters of the entire show.
I feel like the writers knew they had to make up for that, because although I myself have never been on the Skylar hate train, I can kind of see why people some are, don't agree with it, but I think they definitely tried to compensate for that by how they wrote Kim, and they went above and beyond in that regard. Like, yeah. I've never seen anyone with a single bad thing to say about Kim.
Yeah, it's a shame. She can't be the main character, because if she was, they would have to change the title to Breaking Bad.
I don't think Kim breaks bad. What I like about Kim, she's everyone's like spirit person right now. She's the smartest person in the room. She has the best advice.
Mm-hmm.
She has the best legal advice because she's an expert and a fantastic lawyer. She gives this wisdom. She provides this knowledge. And the person listening in all their glorious power fantasy, ignorant splendor goes, no, I think I'm going to go another way. So what choice does she have other than to change? It's like she tries to make the world a better place, and the world says, nah, I think I'm just going to go with squatting and putting on a pouty face. The many other examples of when idiots who think they're in charge have turned down her advice.
We should talk about Tony Dalton as Lalo.
Oh my God. I don't know. I don't speak for everyone saying this, but I felt like last season, I liked his performance, but just really comes into his own this season. And you start to like understand his inner machinations and like where he comes from, why he does what he does. And that's what makes Breaking Bad universe villains so good. They have just as much background and pathos as the protagonists.
And he's so smart. Almost superhuman.
I want to hunt him down and wear his mustache as a trophy.
And he's got such a disarming smile. and charisma to him.
Oh boy, does he.
Oh, that's not a disarming smile. That is an evil fucking smile.
It starts off as disarming, and then you see him do something awful. Then he goes right back into the smile.
He's got that same Gus level of, oh, hey, this guy's not so bad. Oh, Jesus Christ, never mind.
Oh, Nathan, now I know you never had a deal. That smile is familiar, and it means it does not mean anything good.
Probably my favorite Salamanca, though.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, the Salamancas are a lot of fun and have a lot of different qualities they bring to the cartel.
Are you guys annoyed by how Vince Gilligan always gets you to root for villains?
You guys aren't rooting for Lalo, are you?
A little bit. By the end of the season, a little bit. A little bit. What the show did is it reminded me that Gus is an evil fuck.
When did you forget that?
Breaking Bad, you're concentrating on how much of an evil fuck Walter is that you kind of root for Gus a little bit.
Oh, it was an evil fuck off.
Walt could have easily worked with Gus, but his hubris just took him over the edge.
I definitely get it. Like, by the end of the season, I fully understand his pain. I appreciate that about Vince Gilligan shows, and they make you understand them, at the very least.
Let's get into final thoughts on the season, because we have a lot to talk about in spoiler talk. Rose!
This season, just like every other season of the show, was better than the last one. Not to say the last one was bad, but yeah, this had me on the edge of my seat for pretty much every single episode, especially the finale.
Oh, for sure.
And I give this season 9 jumping Lalos out of 10.
Bradley?
I just think this was fine. The first 3 seasons I thought were a masterpiece of storytelling, and I love those. Yeah, Mike's adventures into killing people is cool to watch. I don't really think it's all that compelling. I'm tired of watching the cartel. I really don't think Nacho is going to make it out alive, and I hate that they're making me wait every week to see what happens next with that. But yeah, I think everyone is just on another level with their performances, especially the, I want to know who the acting coach is for this Breaking Bad universe, as they call it. Because so many of these characters turn from like you guys were saying, charming, charismatic, and then they get this shine in their eyes when things aren't going their way. It says, you know I could kill you, right? Are you confused about that? And it's scary. Like, I feel that too. I don't know if it's because I've... Anyways.
Oh, Bradley had a deal.
But I love the lawyer stuff in the show, and it was really light on that towards the end, and that kind of bummed me out. Still, I'd give this 8 squatters on 10 bank properties.
This show isn't as good as previous seasons. It only gets an A-.
Dog it.
Do I have to get the squirt bottle?
It is wonderful, and it's not my favorite season. I gotta agree with Nathan. I think the 3rd season is the best season of the show. But that being said, I still do love this. I enjoy seeing all these beautiful brown people on the television screen. And I enjoy seeing, you know, what the white actors do too. You know, it's fun. But
Jesus.
The way the season ends, it makes me look forward to what's gonna happen next, even though they're probably gonna split into 2 parts, those bastards. And I like to imagine when Bradley watches the show, when the show ends, the opening, the ending titles pop up, he just throws like a mug at the television screen. Because that's how I feel. That's how I felt at the end of the season. Because it's like, oh, now I gotta wait for part 2 of this season so I can watch part 3 in the next year. Yeah, right. No, I'll go ahead and just give this 8 out of 10 Theos that are gonna visit Nathan later.
Passing the talking pillow over to Ryan.
I think this show has just been like amazingly consistent. The performances are just like fantastic all around. The level of tension that they're able to build, like especially in the last 3 episodes, and especially considering that this is a prequel and like we know what happens to most of the characters, and like the fact that I'm like still like on the edge of my seat dying every Monday watching it. Yeah, this really feels like those Breaking Bad fans wanted from the beginning and maybe didn't get. I think this is that Breaking Bad incredibly intense season that people wanted. And it isn't really much as much about like the courtroom drama stuff that the first 3 seasons did like so perfectly, but I kind of appreciate that this season is like kind of a little bit different than the first 3. I am going to give it 9 bowling balls on Howard Hamlin's car out of 10.
This show is awesome. I absolutely adore this show. I have since the start, and season 3, while being my favorite season, has just been a stepping stone for things to get so much better as far as fleshing out these characters. I think season 4 was fantastic. I think this season is pretty close to as great as season 3 is for the most part. I think the performances are great. I think Bob Odenkirk has never been better. He carries so much pain underneath every smile and every loud gesture. I've never seen a performance be so loud yet so subtle. Kim Wexler Ray Sehorn is the MVP of television in general. Might even be the MVP of like this show. I would probably almost definitely say
I would.
Then I always look back at Michael McKean's courthouse scene. Nacho, I just feel bad for him in general. This show is so great. If you didn't watch Better Call Saul after Breaking Bad or just found it to be slow and boring, I know saying, hey, get 5 seasons into it and it really picks up, but I think it picks up after season 3. I'd say back half of season 5 is more intense than stuff you'll find on Breaking Bad and on TV in general. On my final thoughts, because I have oh so many of them, I would give this 9 out of 10 pictures of a man fucking a horse. And now to commence spoiler talk.
Ding, turn the page.
I think it is because of how great those last 5 episodes of the show
It just kept ramping up and up and up.
Oh, tell me about it. The front half is as great as ever. Like, the cinematography is on point. You just feel it coming head on, like a train that's just charging into here. You just feel Walter White just about to come in and wreck
everything. The front half of the season was pretty much what you'd expect so far if you're familiar with the show. And then, in the latter half of it, it's like, all right, everybody good? All right, here we go.
To talk about the front half, I think we should talk about one of the big like guest stars of this season, Dean Norris. Yeah, we get Hank and Gomi back. I think what could have been a very gratuitous cameo just was a nice little fun performance that didn't take away from the energy of the show and felt organic for the most part.
I do wish, though, that they hadn't advertised it like, look who's back this season. If he had just shown up, it would have been a really nice moment. But when he did show up, I was just like, oh, hey, there he is.
Yeah, and I feel like for marketing purposes, like, I do get why they would want to put him in the trailers for it. But I mean, I totally agree. I would have appreciated it if they would have hidden it a little bit more. But Nathan, I totally agree. I love just how like unceremonious it is in a lot of ways. And it really feels like any time they bring a cameo into the show, it's really like to service the plot and not just to show like, oh, Hank is here. Hank from Breaking Bad is here.
Yeah. Another big cameo happens in the front half, which we should just talk about the gene sequence altogether. But Robert Forster comes back as the vacuum repair guy for his last foray into that role.
That was nice.
I don't know about you guys, but Robert Forster's death hit me like a ton
of bricks. Same. Well, I wonder too, you know, where they're going to go with the gene storyline, and if they had more things planned for the vacuum cleaner guy, which they're kind of maybe having to alter now.
As a fun cameo, it fits the story as well. Like, the best thing about the cameos in this show is they all make sense. It isn't like, oh, hey, look, there's somebody who's crossing the street and it's Walt Jr. So anyways, guys, let's talk about Jimmy's torment to Howard Hamlin.
That's some evil shit right there. Like, pranks are pranks, but that's... You don't send prostitutes to somebody like that.
He does.
They're not his prostitutes, it's their caller.
It was funny to see Howard lose faith in humanity every time he interacted with one of these evil people.
I loved watching Patrick Fabian, who is honestly one of the small MVPs of this show, because he goes from being such an unlikable shithead to being like one of the few people with their head on.
Yeah, shit. Props to the writers for making him so likable.
That scene where Jimmy and him have dinner and pay. I saw something in you a long time ago, and I don't know why I didn't just put my foot down and give you a job, but I'd love for you to be a named partner at Hamlin Hamlin McGill. Jimmy does not take that well.
Jimmy has definitely had chances to take like an easier path, but I feel like this was like a very clear, you just see a diverging path for him at the end. And it's just, it makes it like that much more painful that obviously he doesn't outright turn it down, but he wants to let him sit on it to make Howard hurt a little bit.
Mm-hmm. I think Howard is trying to do right, but Howard, read the room. HHM destroyed Chuck. which Chuck built and started. And Howard, you know, kept Chuck around as a puppet, you know, or sorry, a PR prop. Like, here he is, the man, the legend, Chuck. Chuck, why don't you go home, please? Gross. But I will say Howard does have his priorities and he understands what a law firm is. I think all of them kind of come to the law in different ways. Howard's isn't all this is to make money, but it does seem he's kind of skeevy that way. But also, if you can make the firm good, he'll give you a shot. And not a lot of characters, as we saw, are like that. So when he thinks that Jimmy's dream is to still work for the firm, it's like he hasn't noticed the growth in Jimmy at all. Yeah, Jimmy wasn't trying to join HHM, Howard. He was trying to get affection from his brother.
Yeah.
And HHM killed his brother. Don't offer him that job. Read the room.
I don't know how much that mattered. I think Jimmy's just still mad that Chuck liked Howard more.
I don't think it's so much that. I think
maybe
it's his ability to get over the death of Chuck and change his life for something good while this seething rage underneath him about the fact that, you know, A, Jimmy knows pretty damn well that he caused his brother's death. His brother's death is obviously just on Chuck himself, but Jimmy,
of course,
did the little push with the getting his entire health insurance.
You mean when he gaslighted him?
Yeah.
A lot of these characters are coming to terms with the world you live in and decided exists isn't real. That's a fantasy you build for yourself. When Chuck saw that even a piece of shit like Slippy Jimmy or whatever the hell he called his brother could be a lawyer, for some reason it broke him. He couldn't handle it, which I think is horrifying, but also pretty apt to how a lot of human beings think, and it's very sad. With Howard, you know, a job is a job to Howard. Of course you want this job. It's HHM, the best firm ever. Take the job. Like Kim not wanting it either, that blew his mind. Yeah. And he thought it must be because you know Jimmy. It's not, Howard. That's not the world you actually live in. That's just your fantasy of it. And then you have all the power fantasies from these cartel fucks. Holy shit. But go on, I'm ranting.
A big part of what has defined Saul, the last words that his brother say to him, you never really mattered that much to me. You know, you would have mattered more to me if you'd be more honest with yourself. You hurt people, you're never going to stop hurting people. So just own up to it.
Now, do you think he actually meant that, or was that just one last final to him?
Oh, yeah, no, that was definitely one last fuck you, because almost every action he has in the entire show proves otherwise, because he always reacts negatively to whatever Jimmy does, even when it doesn't affect him.
He reacts negatively to Jimmy because he loves Jimmy, but he also, since they were children, has known that Jimmy's a piece of shit.
If you pulled together both of their efforts, you'd have one amazing law team, because I think as a whole, in the beginning of Jimmy's plans, like, he was glad he got that second chance from Chuck years ago, and he wanted to go into law with him, ideally.
Chuck went to school for 10 years to become a lawyer. Jimmy went to a college mill.
Yeah, University of American Samoa, go land crabs.
They're both lawyers, doggit.
Maybe I relate to this more because maybe I'm the Jimmy, and maybe I have an older Chuck brother.
An older brother, yeah.
That if I look back at it, maybe I wasn't the easiest kid to deal with. And I'm going to say right now, I'm going to say Jimmy was probably not the easiest kid to deal with.
Let's talk about the back half of this season. Jimmy versus Kim. When Kim decides to have Jimmy represent the squatter on the bank's property, and the TV ad that he runs.
You mean that art piece?
I follow the money, and I couldn't believe it with my own eyes. The bank I go to is funding terrorism.
Oh my God.
That entire scene where he's showing it to them could only laugh for so much, but I just cringed for so much of it because you hate Jimmy so much in that
moment.
Yeah,
same. I got very evocative memories of what he did back during what, season two, to Irene retirement home. Very funny at first. It was like something you see on Adult Swim in the middle of the night. But after about the sixth or seventh iteration of it that they were made to watch, I just wanted to get up and slap him through my television screen.
I think Kim sort of understands afterwards, despite everything, that like, no matter what happened, Jimmy was going to do this. It's like when he made that commercial in season two, like there was no way he was not going to broadcast that.
Well, you think that she's, in a way, taking responsibility for bringing him into this herself?
Yes.
Can we talk about how the show finally makes it a little bit clear why Kim is the way she is?
Oh, are you talking about the flashback scene?
Her mom was Saul. Not in a similar way, but no, her mom's a fuck-up.
There you go. So
she was an alcoholic fuck-up, yeah.
It made her be the more responsible one. First episode of the first season, you kind of see the dynamic, where she's like a lawyer in a really good position, and like she goes outside to take a smoke break, and she's hanging out with fucking Jimmy McGill.
Jimmy's a likable guy.
He is a likable guy, but Jimmy's the wild card.
We gotta talk about one of Kim's biggest decisions out of the show. Post all that awfulness, they get this close to breaking up. And then Kim decides, or how about we get married?
So she doesn't have to testify against his bad behavior.
Unromantic, but yet romantic.
You thought that was unromantic? Oh yeah, that was romantic for them.
They're not romantic people.
No, it was so both at the same time in the following episode.
Yeah, I mean, they were so methodical about how they approached it, where they just had that very clinical discussion of, this is how this is going to be. We both agree that we're only getting married to cover each other's asses in court. Yeah, got it. But during the ceremony, they were grinning at each other like teenagers.
Yeah, and then they have one of the most like public displays of affection to us as viewers, because most of their relationship mm-hmm. is all small nuances. Hey, what happened to you today? Oh, I got married earlier, yeah. And then they're in bed together, which you hardly ever really see.
Yeah, you see a lot more of Bob Odenkirk this season than previous ones.
He is straight thick.
Yeah, that's messed up how good he looks.
And then we talked about Howard and Jimmy and how they react, but Jimmy's freak out on Howard.
Yes, his Dennis Reynolds moment.
That is one of the best pieces of acting by Bob Odenkirk. It could have been like his big, like, mm-hmm. I am the danger. Like, he could have come off as so badass good. Or scary, but he comes off as so pathetic.
Yeah.
Well, he never gets to vent on how he actually feels. He should have told Howard that instead of leading him along. Well, not exploded on him all, I am the danger, as you said, style. But let him know that I hate your company and I hate you and your opinions, they don't matter.
Who do you think is a bigger threat next season, Lalo or Howard?
Well, what's Howard going to do about anything?
I think Howard is in danger.
You never know. The show could flip it on you.
Oh, totally.
Like, what if Jimmy survives everything, but somehow Howard fucks him over at the very end?
What if the character in the prequel survives everything?
We had two great episodes leading up to the finale. You could flip a coin on which one is my favorite of this season. But we got to talk about Vince Gilligan's episode, Bagman, which is kind of a rehash of something they already did in Breaking Bad. Jimmy is getting money from Lalo to bail him out of court. The cartel rolls up very No Country for Old Men style. Mike dispatches with all of them, and they're stuck in the desert near death, dragging a shit ton of money.
Taking the piss out of Davison, Maine, literally.
Drinking pee. Yeah, drinking pee.
Nice. I just loved all the symbolism in that episode. I love seeing Jimmy so close to death. And even Mike, like, I know you had criticisms towards Mike's character this season and just sort of in the show in general, Bradley.
Yeah, yeah.
But that speech he says about his family.
Oh, yeah.
Just really cemented the fact that, like, oh, you know what? You're the guy who is actually doing it for his family, and Walt was doing it for himself.
And I like difference between the two of them, how by the end, I'm pretty sure both of them were expecting to die in the desert, whether Mike would admit it or not. But meanwhile, Jimmy is throwing a hissy fit on the ground and saying, oh, just leave me here. Jonathan Banks just had this fear, like, in the back of his eyes of, shit, I might not make it out of it this time.
Yeah.
I also just love seeing Jimmy don the space blanket.
Yes.
To lure a threat and then leaving it behind, almost like he's leaving behind the entire incident with Chuck, which I really don't see him bringing it up at all in the next couple episodes, because you see a very different Jimmy coming out of it.
Oh, he's broken. Like all the goofiness from Saul that he had leaned into so hard of, yep, this is who I am now, hey. And yeah, when he comes back from that, he's just very quiet and reserved, and it's kind of shocking.
No, with Jimmy as well, as we see in Breaking Bad, Walt and even Jesse have their near death, I deserve this moment. Every time Jimmy is near death, it's, I don't want to die. So he is not mentally prepared to deal with these, for lack of a better term, psychopaths. Because he doesn't think he deserves to die. I don't think he does either. He's just a goofy-ass lawyer who pulls cons that's getting mixed up with these devil men, you know? It's crazy.
I think there's another side to that, even with Jesse. I mean, his parents probably could just easily assume meth or something.
Yeah.
And, you know, he dies like that. Walt, he knows regardless, if he dies, his family is at least going to be supported by the money and cancer. He has that excuse. Like with Mike, he's also leaving money behind for his family. Dude, they really don't know the situation. Same with Walt, but at some point. But with Jimmy, Kim knows exactly what he went for. And he knows if he dies there, he's just going to leave her absolutely broken.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think she'd be strong enough to get over
it. She would, but she wouldn't be the same person.
That's fair. Speaking of how she talks to a gangster, that final scene of episode 9 where it's Lalo, Jimmy,
Man.
And Kim, and then Mike with a sniper rifle outside, and Nacho in the car, as close as all those characters have ever been to each other in one scene.
I did not realize that I had stopped breathing from watching it so intensely until I found myself out of breath during when the commercials finally broke.
Yeah, like, surprised me so much in that moment, like, when Kim finally stands up. But, like, after the episode, the more I thought about it, I just realized, like, it shouldn't have surprised me at all. Like, that's absolutely what Kim would do in that situation. Like, she's not going to stand down, like, for anyone.
Yeah.
Kim fights for the bully. Oh, yeah. She fights for the little guy. She actually, in a kind of a sick way, saved Lalo's life in that scene as well.
Oh, yeah.
She harnessed that carrot energy very hard.
Simultaneously fucking Nacho over.
Yeah.
Because you could tell that seed just planted in his head, and it leads into that tense scene with Nacho at Lalo's house in the finale.
When she was yelling at him, by the end of the conversation, I love the subtle things. Like when she was done yelling at him and he walked back to his car, the look on his face, it was a very clear look of somebody wondering what a shell company was. He did not want to admit it, and he just left the room. He's like, I guess I'll look into this later.
That kind of intimidation, it creeps me out that whoever wrote this episode even knows about that. Like, I read FBI shit and crime type of stuff to get that kind of a psychological torture that, you know, men do to each other. And he was so in control of that room. He's quite terrifying. And it's weird because of how handsome and charming he can be. And then he's just this scary monster.
That was the scene that made Lalo for me. Just like having Jimmy repeat that story over and over again. And it's just like, I felt like it just felt like it was never going to end. It was excruciating.
Was anyone else expecting him to shoot her? Like the more and more times that he kept asking Jimmy, tell it to me again. And every time they would show his gun in the same shot of Kim, like kind of blurry and in the foreground, I just expecting him to, you know, pull it out and either aim it at her or just straight up shoot her and say, okay,
I thought he was gonna toss her out a window.
I think there was a part of Kim that, even though she was on edge, liked that she was able to control that entire situation. It informs most of her actions in the finale.
Mm-hmm.
How did you guys feel about the finale this season?
I love the fact that not to sound like Rian Johnson here, but it completely actually did subvert my expectations in every way possible. I mean, me and every other fan of the show has been throwing our theories out about Kim and where she would end up and how she would do things for so long, and the exact opposite of all of those happened, but they made it work so organically that I was pleasantly surprised at how wrong I was.
I like that Kim and Jimmy and Saul are planning like one big heist, I'll just call it. So I thought that was neat. Since season one, Nacho's employer wants to kill him has been the theme, and I'm kind of tired of it. Like I said earlier, it's old hat.
Yes, but his employer was not Lalo trying to kill him.
That's fair. I mean, I kind of expected for Nacho's storyline to be completely resolved by the end of this season.
But I thought there was going to be some kind of turn. Like, I thought maybe he was going to side with Lalo, like, go against Gus to, like, save his family. I thought maybe there was going to be some kind of turn. At least that part of it kind of went the way that I thought it was going to.
My only issue with the finale, per se, was just that I expected more to be wrapped up as far as the Nacho and Lalo situation. I mean, a lot happens, but it was stuff I expected to happen like 30 minutes into the episode. Not to say that...
Oh, you pictured Lalo massacring an entire assault team by himself?
I did not picture that. I pictured Lalo realizing that Nacho was the rat early on. Not to say that it wasn't tense as all get out, but I just expected for more to be resolved in that situation. I expected more, and they could definitely, there's still room to impress me as far as how they wrap up this storyline, because I don't think he's going to get a little side movie like Jesse does.
That's what you think.
No, Michael Mando needs to spread his wings and fly into other projects.
Well, he's still got to fight Spider-Man later.
I hope so. I'm so tired of Tony Stark's past fighting Spider-Man. That's another rant.
Let's talk about the final scene of this season and then wrap this up, because I like to beat a dead horse and take a picture of a man fucking a dead horse.
Isn't the final scene just Lalo walking in the night?
Yeah, but it's terrifying.
Well, no, I meant more Kim pew-pewing.
Oh, yeah. I actually gasped out loud when she did that. Was, oh, wait, what?
Especially after like everything that has happened.
She's done cons with him before.
For her to just kind of... I mean, I guess a lot of it has happened to, like, Jimmy, but still, like, the previous day, like, with Lalo essentially, like, threatening their lives, like, the fact that she's able to just kind of brush it off, even though she thinks that he's dead, but still, like, the fact that she's able to, like, brush it off that quickly and say, like, all right, on to the next thing. I think Jimmy is just still dealing with that post-traumatic stress and just not there.
Oh, Kim's ride or die, that's for sure.
Yeah, I think she's always been a little ride or die.
Yeah, but her echoing the thing that he did to her last season, that was almost kind of chilling to see her do that and be so confident in it if she's serious about it.
I can never fully understand what goes behind Kim's mind, because the second you think she's going to zig, she zags, and you're just like, whoa. I think she had a very natural progression where she realized that what she tried to accomplish, defending all these banks and trying to do pro bono work, is not going to work unless she finds some way to cut some corners and get the cases won the way that she wants. I think it was the first episode where it ended with Jimmy pretty much goading her to lying to a client to get ahead, sort of sparked something in her, even though it sickened her. She realized very well that she can get ahead in the same way that Jimmy does, and that terrifies Jimmy.
Yeah, Jimmy did look suitably horrified when she said that and kind of did the finger guns and then just kind of casually turned around like, oh, this is the way it is now. And it cut back to him, and he looked terrified, like, you know, what have I done? And kind of a mix, too, of, wait, you're not supposed to be like this. I'm supposed to be like this.
No, that's her choice.
It is.
Yeah, well, it's her
but
decision.
But I guess he's always looked to her to be the one to rein him in. Yeah. And now that she's acting just like he is, I think he knows that this could potentially get real bad if there's no one there to say, hey, wait a minute.
It's a double-edged sword for him, because on one hand, it's fucking terrifying. But on the other hand, he's never been more turned on in his life.
Yeah.
Well, I think the sad thing is the night before, was it?
Mm-hmm.
He says, I'm no good. I'm this bad guy, and you say, that's the last time, but I don't think I can change. And her response to that, rather than, no, you're a good man, and I love you because I love a good man, you know, like a cheesy CW thing, her response was, you're not going to change, and I'm cool with that. You're right, that would break my heart if I was in her relationship. Yeah.
Trying to fill that hole in her heart that her mother left.
Oh.
Can we talk about little Kim Wexler? How great was that actress?
She was fantastic.
Oh, how great was the mother? I thought it was just Ray Seahorn under makeup or something, but that mother must have studied all of her mannerisms.
Yeah, that whole scene was amazing. Daughter playing young Kim and her mother with the same slight quirks that, Ray Seahorn has developed through that character. I loved it.
Maybe you guys expected it, but I did not think that she would full-on break bad.
She hasn't committed any crimes yet.
With her whole last conversation with Jimmy starting in bed where she's like, hey, let's frame Howard for something he didn't do. And every time Jimmy kind of, wait, really? Her, I just kept expecting her to go, no, I'm not serious. You out of your goddamn mind? But she just kept going into it and going into it. And then, you know, the finger guns happened and just like, oh, she's serious. Okay.
I thought she was just going to see like, oh, you know, if he agrees to all this, like we're fucking through and then just leave him there.
Oh, that's horrible.
And that's how I expected it. I know.
Kim is not deceitful that way. I guess she will be.
I know, but... and I should have realized that. I just figured maybe there might have been a part of her that was like, man, Howard, like, he really tried to warn me, and I just got to see how warped Jimmy really was. But no.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's just going to leave us into a lot of interesting things next season.
Yeah, 8 years from now.
When we get it.